This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
All right. Welcome to the Sub 70 Golf Podcast. This is Jay. It is Sunday, March 25th. The semifinals and finals of the WGC match play are taking place today. In the semifinals, you have Bubba Watson taking on Justin Thomas and Kevin Kisner taking on Alex Noren. All four guys have been playing really well this year, so it's really no shock to see them make it to this point. Although, you know, it's match play, so anything can happen. A couple surprising things. I mean, DJ looked absolutely brutal out there. He lost all three of his matches and really, I don't think, was ever really in contention in any of them. Spieth still struggling, it seems like. His yardages and his putting just are not right. Rory coming off a huge win. Could have been a little bit of fatigue. I mean, he comes off of a win on Sunday and has to get back out there on Wednesday and then play matches Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Didn't look great, but I'm not sure how much you can take from it, considering it was a short week and he's coming off that win. It'll be interesting to see what happens here. You know, Justin Thomas and Bubba and Noren and Kisner are all looking great, and any one of them could win this thing. They're still on the front nine here today, so we'll see what happens. The interview on this episode of the podcast is with Dave Stockton Jr. Dave is a very well-respected and noted instructor and coach. He and his father and even grandfather have been in the game of golf for a long time and have all had very successful careers in a number of ways as players, coaches, instructors, and so on. Jason talked with Dave about, you know, his family and all the work they've done with players like Patrick Reed, Rory McIlroy, Phil Mickelson, Matt Kuchar, and plenty of other guys. Talked to Dave about him getting ready for returning to competition on the Champions Tour. And some other awesome topics. They talked about Q School and what it's like going through that process. Definitely appreciate the time. It's a very interesting, cool conversation from the perspective of someone that spent most of their time as a coach or instructor for the highest level of golfer in the world. Definitely appreciate the time. If you guys have any feedback, check us out on social media at GolfSub70. Here's the interview.
Well, I would like to welcome to the podcast a two-time Web.com winner, former PGA Tour player, noted instructor and soon-to-be Champions Tour player, Dave Stockton Jr. Dave, welcome to the podcast, and thank you very much for doing this today.
Thanks, Jason. Glad to be on.
Well, I know you're turning 50 in July, and you're going to be out playing some Champions Tour events. How excited are you to get back out there and compete again and see with how the game translates over to the Champions Tour? We know those guys can really play out there.
Yeah, they can play in the 3M will be my first one, the 3M Championship in Minneapolis. And, yeah, it's a course where they shoot low. And, you know, basically I got to get rid of my teacher's hat and put on my player's hat and go out and make a ton of birdies, which, you know, I'm looking forward to the challenge. I'm working on my game now. I've got several different things I'm doing, but you know, it's just about managing my time and getting the rust off because it's been since 2004 that I played on tour. So that's a lifetime when it comes to being a professional golfer, but I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, that kind of flows into my next question. You know, obviously you've been teaching for a long time at this point. Like, so what do you have to do? And it's not like you haven't played at a very high level and been successful at doing it. So you've done it in the past, but how are you getting yourself ready for this? Is it a lot of literally working out physically? Is it mentally? Is it just a ton of practice and preparation? Or what do you think it's going to take for you to be, you know, competitive and successful out there? What are you kind of doing at this point to get ready for that?
Well, it's all of the above. I'm I'm healthy physically. I'm healthy, strong. I always joke that, you know, I left the tour not because of any physical injuries. It was more mental injuries. And, obviously those, that's a long time ago. And, you know, when I say put my player hat back on, it really is to get back in the mindset of being a player, because I've been teaching full time since, 2009. And, you know, I thoroughly enjoy teaching. I'm not going to stop teaching. I've got a lot of people, I work with, and a lot of kids, especially too, juniors. And I get so much joy out of teaching that, I kind of feel like that was what I was meant to always do, because, I enjoy it. It's not work to me. If you enjoy what you do in your job and it's not work, you love it, then you're lucky. And I feel that way with teaching. Later in my career playing on tour, I lost that joy. Didn't enjoy being away from my family. My daughter Serena, who's a freshman in college now at University of San Diego, she was born 3 months premature in 98, and she was an identical twin. We lost the other one. And I was at the Milwaukee Open. She was 29 weeks, so she was really early, and I was in Milwaukee when my wife had her. And I took the rest of the year off and lost my card by $6,000 because we were in the hospital for 3 months, and golf really didn't matter to me. And I went back to Q school, finished fourth, got my card back, but I was never the same player after that. And I kind of lost the interest in the drive to play, the edge to play that you have to have at the highest level. And then my son Jake was born, who's a freshman, a sophomore in high school now, in 2001, right after 9/11. And I just didn't want to be away from home. And I was grinding it out for a few more years, playing in through 2004, and then I had a bad year in 2003 and 2004, and I just said, I'm done. And did TV for a couple of years for USA Network and really enjoyed that, and then did some real estate. And then 2008 happened, and real estate wasn't so much fun. And then I started teaching, and I'm like, wow, I really found something I love doing again. And so that's what it's been. But now to get back, and all my friends that I played with on tour, the regular tour, they're all on the Champions Tour now. Everybody I talk to, we're having so much fun out here, you know, and every one of them says it's super competitive, which I know it is. I go out to some of the events. I've been to several with my dad and, as well. And, you know, it's just, everybody's having fun. And I want to see if I can have the fun on the golf course again that I had, you know, before my kids were born. And, you know, it should be a good time.
Yeah, it's. We just had Jerry Kelly on, and I asked him how much fun he's having out there, and he said more than you can imagine. Like, it's competitive, yep, but it's fun. Like, he's really enjoying it. And the other part from your comments, I don't know if the average golf fan knows the sacrifice to be a touring professional and be successful at it, of what you guys went through or go through from being away from home, from the time commitment. It's got to be really difficult on, you know, the family and everything, or the sacrifice everyone has to make to do it. So
yeah.
I don't think people realize how difficult it truly is.
No, they think it's glamorous, and it's, you know, you're in a hotel, you're living out of a suitcase, and you know, it's a little more bearable now. The guys have their own jet and they're flying around, but they're still away from home, they're still missing family time, and that's a tough balance. And the guys that can handle it and play at the highest level, I commend them and admire them that they're able to do that. That wasn't something I did very well.
Will you go to Q school for the Champions Tour this fall if need be?
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, unless I won one of the events that I'm going to play in this year, I've got to go, you know, I've got to do that. So that'll be the plan. I know there's not very many spots, but again, it'll be a fun challenge. I got through Q school and the PGA Tour 4 times. You know, I'm looking forward to the challenge. It's, you got to just go low. You got to shoot low.
Yeah, it's what Jerry said too. Like Jerry said, you have to get that mindset that you got to go low. And it's just a little bit different than the PGA Tour, where sometimes par doesn't hurt you out there. But we're looking forward to watching you out there, man. It should be fun to see. You grew up obviously in a very famous golfing family. You know, your dad, Dave Stockton, great player. What's your memory sort of growing up around the game? And I'm assuming you started playing very young. And how did your family introduce the next generation to the game of golf?
Yeah, well, my grandfather, my dad's dad, was an All-American at USC and won the Pac-8s when it was the Pac-8s, and was a club pro and owned a sporting goods store. And so he taught my dad. My dad played all the sports growing up and then focused on golf after 15 years old when he broke his back surfing at 15. So he couldn't play the other sports as well, and so he just focused on golf. And they lived on a golf course, taught my dad everything he knew, and you know, my dad being an All-American at SC, and he won the Pac-10s, and then I went to SC. I was an All-American there, but didn't have the success that my grandfather and my dad had there, it's been in our family, growing up on tour as a kid. I mean, I was only a few weeks old when I was first out on tour, and I learned the game caddying for my dad in the 80s. I started in 1980 when I was 12, spent the summer caddying for him, and I did that every summer growing up. I didn't play a lot of junior golf. There wasn't all the tours that there are now for kids. And I really learned the game watching the best players in the world and having a front row seat to it. I'm happy that I got that. I started playing when I was two. My dad, we just moved from our place in the desert to Carlsbad, San Diego this summer, and I came across my first set of clubs, which were cut down from when I was a little kid, just a 2-3-year-old, and they were Dave Stockton Spalding irons and professional irons and the little wooden driver and just the steel shafts. And it's hilarious to see what they have for juniors now versus what I, what I had. But, it's been in my blood. I knew at a young age I told my parents when I was 13 that I knew what I wanted to do with my life. And I wanted to be on the PGA Tour, and just having grown up in that, I loved it. And so, you know, that's what I did. I really enjoyed it, you know, up until wanting to be with my family more.
Was your dad always your teacher? Or I know that I have kids and sometimes they don't want to hear instruction from dad and they can kind of let a coach do it. So did your dad teach you, or at some point did you kind of say, let's go to another direction, have a not dad being dad and coach at the same time?
No, he taught me growing up, and joking. We always joke. I mean, he was threatening to, because as a teenager, you know everything, and you don't think your parents know anything. And I would always say, I know dad, I know. And he said he was going to get me my first license plate on my first car. I was going to say, I know. And he didn't do it. Thank God. They'd be funny. He'd tell me something and, you know, we'd be out on tour and I'd say, hey dad, look at this. Payne Stewart told me this. And he says, I told you that 4 months ago. You know, it was always, you know, yeah, you told me, but I heard it from so-and-so then I'm going to do it. And that comes full circle.
What's your dad know? He just has two major championships,
right? Yeah.
He doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah. Two on the regular tour, three on the championship tour. What's he done? Right. Yeah.
Right. I mean, exactly.
But then I did, when I played on the tour, I worked with a guy who I really admire, a great swing coach, Chris Walkie, in the desert, and he helped me a ton, just made it, everything he said always made sense to me and was good. But short game and putting was always my dad. Chris was swing, usually there weren't too many issues with the short game and putting. But if there was, it would be a simple little fix, a couple words from my dad type thing.
And then you played golf at USC yourself. Is that a lot of pressure with a famous last name and the expectations going into that situation?
You know, I never thought of, I got asked that a lot growing up and a lot even when I was on tour. I never thought about it. I knew I was a different person from my dad and I never felt pressure or... I just never felt that at all. I was my own person. I was going to make my own way. And so, you know, I embraced it more than maybe some people would. But it was never I never looked at it that way or thought, oh, my gosh, my dad's so-and-so. He was just my dad.
And then you play at USC, really successful career there, and you turn pro. And then in 93, you win twice on the Nike Tour, which is now the Web.com Tour. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming the confidence had to be pretty high going into the PGA Tour in 94 after the success you had on the Nike Tour at that point.
Yeah, it did. I mean, I've always been a feast or famine. If I'm on, I play really well. If I'm off, it can be really ugly. And I had two top tens that year on the Nike, and they were both wins. And the first one was, I was more shocked than anything, just one of those weeks. And on the 71st hole, I made a 50, 60 foot bomb to take a one shot lead. And I made a 4-footer on the last hole to win. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And I thought, wow, you know, I'm gonna kick butt now. And I missed the next two cuts, typical. And then I go to Iowa City and play at, I think Finkbein was the name of the course. The Iowa Hawkeye Open. And, I shot 64, 70, 66, I think were my scores. We got rained out one day, but I was tied with Mike Heinen for the lead going to the final round. And it wasn't a question of if I was going to win, it was by how many. And I shot 66 and won by four. And I just remember that confidence. And I went into Q school that year, exempt to go to finals, which were in the desert at PGA West and La Quinta. And, I had learned a ton the year before I went to finals, and I was not thinking the right way. I was thinking outcome and what was the score, what did I have to shoot, and I only beat like 10 guys. And I went into that Q school with the mindset that I was going to win it, and I wasn't going to look at scores. I wasn't going to, you know, care what anybody shot. I was going to do my own thing, and I ended up winning it. And it was a mindset thing, and I think that's why I was able to get through Q school three more times. I wish I was as good at on the regular tour as I was at Q school. I seemed to play okay that week, which is really the hardest week you can experience because you're either playing for $5 million a week or you're playing for $500,000. It's a giant pay difference for the year.
Yeah, that pressure has to be as great as anything I'd have to imagine. And then mm-hmm. This kind of goes into my follow-up. So then you play the PGA Tour basically for the next 10 years.
Right.
What did you see the difference between the guys on the PGA Tour versus the guys on, which would have been the Nike Tour back then? Like, what was the biggest difference that you saw in your eyes between the two tours when you were out there playing, when you got to the big tour?
Well, playability-wise, not a lot. And it's even tighter now than it was then. I mean, the guys that are playing on the web.com now, they're all definitely good enough to play on the PGA Tour and compete. It's just, yeah, you know, having the timing be right and getting it done. But, you know, obviously you're playing in harder to get towns, harder to get to towns, and for less money. Golf courses are solid, you know, maybe not, they're not as manicured and pure as the PGA Tour courses, but the guys hit it 100 miles like they do on the regular tour as well. If not longer on the web.com now, but there wasn't a big difference. And the competition was extremely tight. And it was just, you know, I caught lightning in a bottle in 93 and then, you know, got out there for 94 and you never want to go back. And, you know, I went back and played some tournaments over the years and ended up playing that tour in 2002 and 2004. In between playing the regular tour in 03 for the last year. The guys can all flat play. You got to golf your ball. It's kind of like Champions Tour. You got to go out and you got to shoot low. The competition's tighter now than it's been ever because it's more worldwide, and that's more of the Tiger effect.
So looking back at your career, and I mean, I think it's pretty still amazing to get to that level. Like, you played top-level golf and the biggest tour in the world for 10 years. You had a second place finish. Do you look back at it with, wow, I accomplished a lot? I mean, you're out there for a lot of events and it's hard to get out there and stay out there. Or is it, do you feel that you didn't get the most out of your talent? And obviously, there's a family situation, all the rest of it. Do you view it glass half full, or is there a little bit still lacking that you, if you could have, would have, should have sort of thing, you know, playing the PGA Tour? But like I said, on the flip side is you're out there against the best competition for 10 years straight, which is really hard. I mean, it's difficult.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I wasn't consistent. I wish, you know, 94, I had a couple good chances to win. I had a really good chance to win at Castle Pines, the International. I birdied four holes in a row in the back nine to take the lead or be right there for the lead, playing, getting up on 17, and I hit the cart path off the tee on the right side and went into the woods, ended up finishing eighth. And that was one where if I make birdie, I'm in a playoff with Rick Fair and Steve Lowry, who I was playing with. And, you know, that one, and then Hartford, obviously, and which would have been cool because my dad won the same week. We were both leading after Friday. And then Saturday I was tied for the lead with David Frost going into Sunday. And my dad was going to win his tournament for sure. And, you know, I shoot 72 on Sunday. You can't do that on the PGA Tour. You're not going to win. Yeah, third that year, and then second the next year to Norman there. Something in the water in Connecticut. That was my first pro win on the Nike Tour in New Haven. And then always seemed to play well at Hartford, and the people were great there, and I love the golf course. But, yeah, I mean, there was. I look back, I wish I'd have won. Obviously, anybody who hasn't won wishes, yeah, God, I wish I'd just, you know. I joke with Norman because, you know, he got snake bit over the years with shots. People hit miraculous shots, and well, he got me that year because I made a 40 footer on 16 to tie him for the lead, the par three, and I'm walking up to 17, the par four, and I hear this roar behind me, and he's chipped in for eagle on 15, and the ball, I saw it on later on, it hit the flag and went in. If it doesn't hit the flag, it's off the green, and you know, he parred the last three, I parred the last two, and you know, Fuzzy and I tied for second, but you know, it's It is what it is. I played as well as I could and didn't quite get it. Maybe get the wins. Maybe I'll get some wins on the Champions Tour. And so that's the next goal.
Well, that's what I say. That's such a cool part of this is, you know, it's sort of like a 2.0. And you know, and more freed up and go out there and see what happens with it. I think it'll be, like I said, I love watching these guys hungry and turning 50 and kind of see what they can do, because there's a lot of guys who we had Sean McKeel on, and same thing, like he can't wait to get out there. Like, it's going to be really fun the next couple of years to watch all these guys who can't wait to get out there and see what they can do with it. So it's going to be great for the Champions Tour. Well,
yep.
I want to talk about your dad a little bit, because we went back and forth on Twitter. And so I don't know if everyone knows this, but I mean, he's got two major majors on the regular tour. Like you said, three on the Champions. 10 wins on the PGA Tour, 14 wins on the Champions Tour with three majors. Ryder Cup winning captain. How is he not in the Hall of Fame? I am baffled, just literally baffled on that one.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at his whole body of work from his playing, you know, the majors, what he's done for the game of golf and in teaching as well in the corporate world with the corporate outings. You know, in the 80s, they called him the king of the corporate outings. I mean, he's always gone out of his way to be, he's such an ambassador for the game and has reached so many people. And, you know, I got to believe at some point that he's going to get voted in, but you know, he's 76 and his playing days are long behind him, but you know, they kind of, you know, they've got guys in there that don't really have a better career than what my dad's had, but they're cooler and they're more recent. You know, I mean, one of the guys that stands out to me who was a great player for a long time on the PGA Tour and still playing great on the Champions, Fred Couples. Freddie's in the Hall of Fame. He's got, you know, he won one major, the Masters, and had an awesome career. Well, he's in the Hall. Well, I look at my dad's career and I look at Freddie's career and I go, okay, well, I'm biased, I guess. I'd say, well, my dad should be in there as well.
No, I'm not just saying that because you're on. Like, I look at that body of work. And then also, like you said, what he's done for the game, like, he's sort of pioneered how guys make money off the golf course. I mean, he was the first, one of the first guys out there sort of showing, you know, this is how it you can run a business on top of being a professional golfer and getting out there with corporate. I mean, like I said, he was a pioneer in a lot of ways. And, you know, this, and this falls into my next question. People don't also realize what he's done as a teacher. I mean, you think of him as the Ryder Cup captain and a player, but his teaching legacy is pretty amazing as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the players that we've worked with on the tour, the list of people we've worked with, people he's worked with that have won on the tour. I mean, the number is pretty amazing. I mean, last week we were both at Valspar for the sponsor, and we're going to cut back on the amount of time we're out on tour. We're just not working with that many guys, and you know. One of the guys we worked with for about a year was Patrick Reed. And, you know, through the Ryder Cup when he played well, first time I worked with him was the FedEx event at Bethpage, and he won it. You know, and then he went away from us, which a lot of guys do. I mean, we try to simplify it so guys don't need to worry about putting, because it is the easiest part of the game in our eyes. But we told him that last week, that we're not going to be out on tour as much. And he said, "Well, why?" I said, "Well, we're not working with that many guys, and you know, we've got other things. We got other things that we're busy doing." And he said, "Well, I need some help." And so last week, I was playing the pro-am on Wednesday off-site, and my dad spent, you know, 30 minutes with him on the green, and in 5 minutes fixed what was wrong. And I showed up at the end of it. He's just smiling and happy, and now he goes out and has his first top 10 of the year. So. Just little things like that I see my dad do, and it's like, yep, that's pretty cool, you know.
Is it mainly short game that you guys work with the PGA Tour players with, or will you occasionally work with some long swing or full swing stuff as well, or is it mainly short game?
Yeah, nobody on the PGA Tour. We don't work with anybody full swing. We're short game putting, and we work on the mental side with people. I mean, the mental side, that was one thing that, you know, with Rory was more on the mental side. Changing the way he thought on the course was something that my dad immediately got him thinking a different way on the course. A month later, he won his first major by 8 shots after blowing the Masters. I mean, that, you know, that was pretty cool. It's just because so much of short game and putting, and so much of the game obviously is on the mental side, and being able to of players of all levels be able to get people in the right frame of mind on the course. If you're in the right frame of mind, it's not about being perfect and having the perfect golf swing or the perfect stroke, but it is about having the right mindset and thinking the right way on the golf course.
Well, Rory was one of the guys I wanted to actually talk to you about, because I know you've worked with him in the past, mm-hmm. and all the whole Stockton family has. And I was kind of looking at his stats, and he's really struggling from 100 yards and in, even with wedge play, and his putting stats are down.
Right.
Just as a observer of golf, what are you seeing, what's kind of going on? And from afar, can you sort of see the struggles that he's having, or is he really close and it's just, you know, he has such talent. Is it a millisecond away from fixing it, or what's sort of your assessment of what you're seeing from Rory this season?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't worked with him for about 2 years. You know, we can see, you know, last week we never saw him on the putting green. My dad saw him on the range, and he was looking at the TrackMan every shot he hit. He's looking at the numbers on the TrackMan, and, you know, he's checking that out. And, you know, my dad and I are just, I think you want to focus a little more on the, I mean, he's a great ball striker. I mean, he hits the ball. Everybody'd love to hit it like Rory does. He peers it. But, you know, short game and putting, maybe he's gotten a little more mechanical. His mindset's not the same as what it was. Who knows? I mean, it's, we're not around. We can see in the putting what's going on. We can see that, but not talking to him, don't know what he's thinking about, don't know what's in his head when he's over a putt. Whereas when we're working with someone, we know what their mindset is, and we know their you know, get them thinking the right way. So it's more speculation, but we, in the stroke wise, it's pretty easy to see what's going on. But putting's 90% mental and 10% mechanics. So the mechanics aren't great, but that's not that big a deal, because if your mental's good, that's 90% of putting. It's not about having the perfect stroke, but it is about having the right mindset. If you're walking into a putt and you're not fully expecting the ball to go into the hole where you see it going in, and you're thinking anything else, and you're thinking about all these different things, you're not going to make putts.
Well, maybe that explains my my problem with my golf game then with my putter. But no, it's crazy to think even at the highest level, right? Like some of those guys, with all their talents they have, it's still they have doubts, right? Of is this 8 footer going down the hatch? It's just interesting to watch, because he seemed like he was closer earlier in the year on the European Tour. He played really well, but man, his wedge game is a struggle right now, and it's got to be frustrating for him for as well as he hits it. I mean, he hits so many looks.
Yep. Yeah, he hits it. He hits it pure. He gets a lot of looks at it. You know, it's tough. I mean, he's as good as he is to go from number one in the world to 12th, and he's healthy. That's got to be, you know, frustrating and alarming. But you know, he's too good a player not to come back and get it right. And I hope he does. He's a great guy, and you know, it'd be great for the game of golf if he got back to winning again.
Who are some of the other tour players that our listeners might have heard of that you really, as a person, and then the improvements they made that you truly enjoyed working with?
Well, Phil was the first one in 2009. That's really what started our business. We went and spent a couple days with him at the Bridges here in San Diego, and the next week was the tour championship at Eastlake, and he won by 3. And you know, that was kind of like, we had kind of that aha moment, like, wow, we can really help people. And he was a big proponent early of us, and talked highly of what we, you know, how we helped him and everything else. And it was nice. Matt Kuchar's one, really enjoy working with Matt, for the time we did. And he's a perfect example of a guy that has the right mental approach, always has. And was it 2010? He was number one on the money list and 5th in putting. And I think that's what he was. He was one on the money list and 5th in putting. And he wanted to pick our brain on the greens. And we laughed. And he said, "What are you laughing at?" I said, "Well, we usually get the guy that's ranked 150th in putting, not 5th." And he laughed at that. And we got to talking about, you know, what hand's direction and which hand's feel. And he said, "Left hand's direction, right hand's feel." He said, "Perfect, make a stroke." And he made a stroke with his left hand going right through without breaking down, which was perfect. And we said, "Explain us how you putt like this." And he was cross-handed at the time, and the putter would get flipped. He wouldn't hold the angle right through. He'd flip it. And you could see the light bulb turn on in his head. And 2 weeks later, he had the putter going up his arm at Riviera. And understood that he made that his own. We'd never thought about having a longer putter grip and sticking it on the forearm and just never breaking down. But he made that himself. And the reason I bring him up is he had a flip stroke, but he was 5th in putting. Well, why? Well, mindset. He's walking in smiling. He's walking in expecting it to go in. If it doesn't, he's not. He's shocked, but he'll make the next one. He's got a good attitude. And you think about people that have, you know, are not good putters. Well, their attitude's probably not very good to start with, and they're working on the stroke, trying to get a perfect stroke all the time.
Is it hard to take a PGA Tour player who's, you know, they obviously all putt good and they're very talented? Do they take instruction immediately, or sometimes is it hard for them to sort of get the point that you guys were trying to make because they've done it so long and they have been relatively successful? Is that a difficult barrier to get past sometimes?
So everybody's different, you know. Science, you have feel players and then you have mechanical players. And the feel players, it's much easier. The mechanical players, it's much more difficult. Lee Westwood, we worked with him one time during Firestone Week a couple of years back. We worked with him once, never worked with him again. Justin Rose, I worked with him twice, once at a Colonial for 2 hours. He won Memorial the next week. And then the next one I worked with him was over the phone. I told him what, you know, what I saw and why he why he didn't finish it. He didn't win Hartford. He had a 3-shot lead, and he didn't. I could see on TV he wasn't comfortable, and he called me, and I told him what I saw, and then he won the next week at AT&T at Aronimink in Philadelphia, his first two wins on tour. Never worked with him again after that. And you find that much more so with the mechanical players. They tend to have a hard time with relaxing their mind and not thinking about everything being perfect just so. One that was able to switch and do it and never changed was Annika. My dad worked with her around 2000, and she was obviously a very, very mechanical, and she didn't cut well. And she was inconsistent, and she asked him for help, and he looked at her stroke and took her prac strokes, and my dad said, "You got to get rid of the prac strokes. They're killing your rhythm." And she goes out that day and doesn't have prac strokes, and he said, "How was it at the end of the day?" And she said, "Terrible. I got to have prac strokes." And he said, "That's fine." He says, "If you're going to do a prac stroke, do it back behind the ball looking straight down your line, like you're looking down the barrel of a gun. Don't be doing it at the ball." And because it's about having a rhythm to your stroke and everything else. Well, she went from winning twice in a year to 17 wins the next 2 years, and she still putts that way today.
Yeah, this is a follow-up, and you're kind of, maybe this is the answer. Is there one player that you worked with or your family worked with that had the biggest improvement that you saw and they just sort of stuck with it and still to this day? Is there one student that stands out where it was, we changed, huge improvement, continued success?
Is there one that huge from, yeah, a tour player?
Yeah, really struggling, but the talent was there and you guys, LPGA player, PGA Tour player, with your guys' guidance, for lack of a better word, the aha moment happens, and now you see this player over the years take off from what you guys taught him, where there was a huge amount of improvement.
Well, I mean, he was already winning, but I mean, there's several. One would be Rory. I mean, he'd never won a major. He was young, but you know, and he had the lead at the Masters and blew it, and shot 80 or whatever he shot the last day, and he handled it very well. And then 2 weeks after that Masters, he sat down with my dad and they talked, and my dad saw his stroke and they started talking. And a month later, he wins the Congressional by 8. You know, I mean, and then he won 4 majors with his time working with us and got to number 1 in the world. Now, he was kind of heading that direction, but he sure got there in a hurry, winning those majors like that. You know, I think another one would be on the LPGA would be Yani Singh when she first came over. Obviously, Annika was already one of the top players in the world, if not the top. But then after she switched that, she started winning even more. You know, I look at a one that people may or may not know, Sean Stephanie, who's a really solid player. He came to my dad, and my dad was in Houston for the event there to work with Phil and Rory, and he wanted help with his putting. And it's Thursday, 2 hours before Sean's teeing off. My dad hasn't met him, finally meets him, and my dad says, "Well, tell me about yourself." And he said, "Well, I'm about to be married. I'm 31 years old, and this is probably my last PGA Tour tournament that I'm going to play on the tour." And my dad's like, "Why?" He says, "Well, I've had a major medical. This is my last event. I've got to make $80,000 or I lose my card." My dad's like, "Well, you're teeing off in 2 hours. I don't want to mess with you and tell you stuff right before you." And he said, no, Mr. Stockton, I need to do this. I'm not putting well, and I know you can help me." Well, long story short, Sean finishes fifth that week, makes 543 or 547 foot of putts, makes 240,000, keeps his card, and made everything he looked at. And then later that year, I worked with him at Congressional, and he lost a playoff to Justin Rose. So in 2 events, he made $1 million. You know, things like that where you see someone who's thinking this is their last event on the tour, and boom, now they're going. It's really neat to see. If we get far more enjoyment out of seeing players that we work with, whether it's a 15 handicap, 20 handicap, or a top of the world tour player play well, we see them improve and play well. We get so much more satisfaction out of that than anything we did playing-wise.
Yeah, it's got to be a great feeling. Like I said, no pressure on Sean Stephanie on that one for 2 hours to go, and we're going to change your putting stroke up, and let's go make at least 80,000. I mean, that's some pretty good pressure playing. Yeah, it's got to be super rewarding to have your knowledge go to somebody and see them improve. Like, it's got to be a cool thing to do.
Yep.
Follow-up to that, do you think great putters and short game players are just sort of born with that talent, or... And I'm talking about the elite guys, so obviously they all are good, but to be great at it. Or can that be taught? Or the guys who have great touch, I think of like Ben Crenshaw, like that stroke just looks like he was born with it. Can it be taught, or is there a certain level that you're, without that touch or feel, you're not going to be great, or can you be great with the right instruction? I guess that's my question.
Anybody can be a great putter. The thing is, it's 90% mental. And what you see most people do is they'll teach the 10%, the mechanics of the stroke, how the stroke needs to be. Well, if you're not thinking the right way and you're over a putt worrying about where you don't want it to miss or thinking about a million things, putting's about feel and visualization. So if you're not visualizing the ball going in and using your feel, which is your eyes, looking out at the hole, you're not going to have good feel. You're not going to make putts, and you're thinking too much. It's about rhythm and feel, visualizing, and so much of that is more on the mental side. It's not, the mechanics of the stroke are so simple, and complete opposite of a golf swing is totally different. There's so much more going on in a golf swing. The putting stroke, very little going on, but how busy is the mind?
And that's the part that, you through proper instruction, and you can get that, you can get to the next level a little bit easier than you can with a full swing from a putting is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at it from the correct approach.
Yep.
I also know you're working with a young player named, I hope I have the last name correct, Charles Reeder.
Charlie Ryder.
Right, yeah. And he played in the Career Builder. How's his game progressing? His golf swing looks fantastic. Obviously, there's a lot of talent there. How's his game coming along, and how much fun has it been to work with a young guy like that with that kind of level of skill set?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I started working with him when he was 10, and short game and putting, and on the work, some on the mental stuff as well. He's got a good mental coach in Howard Falco, but who I like a lot. And I caddied for him in the Career Builder, and I saw firsthand. I mean, he hits it so solid, and he hits it so far. It's unbelievable. And he's got very good touch around the greens, and he's a good putter, which he better be, or I'm not doing my job. And but he's got a good head on his shoulders. That's the big thing. And he played with Maverick McNealy for 3 days, who was a perfect pairing for him. And it was great to see him pick Maverick's brain, because obviously Maverick's had a hell of a career for as young as he is as well. And Maverick walks over to me halfway through the first day at La Quinta and said, "It's emasculating playing with this kid." So. You know, he's got a great future. We joked back and forth. He said to me, he says, early in the week, he says, "Man, you know everybody out here." I said, "Well, I grew up out here, and I played out here for a while. I should know everybody." And he laughed, and we're playing, and he's like, and he was 8-under through 27 holes before the wheels came off at the stadium course, which for a lot of guys they do. And but he said to me, he said, "You know, you might have to caddy for me on the tour when I get on tour." I said, "I can do that, Charlie." He says, "But you're going to be like 70. You're going to be really old." I says, whoa, time out. I'm 50 this year. I'm not that old. You're not, what are you going to go to school for 20 years? Come on. So we had fun. He's a great kid. And it's been fun to watch him progress and grow.
And on the other end of the spectrum, we have Phil Mickelson, which I think what he's doing at 48 is, or almost 48, is pretty amazing. What's your impression of Phil at this point in his game and his career at this, you know, still at this level at this age? And then I know you competed against him growing up. Do you, as a side note, do you have any great Phil stories of Phil being Phil?
It's amazing to see a guy that's had the joy he has for the game and to see how excited he is to go out and play. After all the success he's had, and to go out and still win and compete at that level and enjoy it while he's doing it, You don't see that very often. When he's playing, when he's out, it doesn't look like it's work. He's having fun, and I think that's why he's had the career he's had, the longevity that he's had, is because he's enjoying what he's doing. There's a lot of guys that play out there, and they don't enjoy it, but they're really good at it, and they won't be around as long because they just won't want to be. But he loves to compete. He's, you know, I have a funny, I mean, he always handled me on the golf course. I mean, he was a tough guy to beat, but years ago we were playing in the Colorado Open, staying at Brett Dean's house, who was a teammate of his at ASU and a buddy of mine in Colorado. And there was five ASU players there and the lone Trojan, me. And he had a pool table down in the lower level of the house. And so we're all playing pool and we're playing $5 a game. And I grew up with a pool table, so I can hold my own on a pool table. And when I started playing Phil, and I beat him, and he goes, double or nothing. And I beat him again. And he said, double or nothing. I beat him again, double or nothing. I said, Phil, you might want to stop doing this. He says, no, double or nothing. Well, I beat him out of $160. We never played pool again after that, oddly enough. But it was pretty funny. I mean, that's just, he just, there's no quit in him. He's a gambler. He expects to win. He's going to grind it out any way he can. But that wasn't the right thing for him. He's better on the golf course than he is on the pool table.
Well, that event in Mexico, I don't know if anyone else could have pulled it off. I mean, he's got his, in the playoff, only Phil could have his arm around the CEO of the event walking down the fairway. He's talking to the fans in Spanish. Like, it was just so perfect in his element. And it looks like it's just pure joy. Like, he's having as much fun as ever doing it. It's, from a golf fan standpoint, it's so fun to watch. Like, just letting Phil be Phil. Mm-hmm. Tiger, with his comeback, just put on your golf analyst hat. Like, I never thought it would be this good again this early, or be able to create the speed. I thought he'd have to play small ball again. But the speed's there. It looks better. What's sort of your assessment of what you're seeing of Tiger at this point?
Yeah, it's so impressive to see, and it's exciting to see. I mean, I can't wait to be at Augusta this year. It's going to be fun to be there, and the excitement's going to be ridiculous. And what's even cooler is, you know, he's competing now against the kids that got turned on to this game because of what he was doing in the 90s and early 2000s. These are kids that grew up watching him, idolizing him. Now they're playing against him. It's got to be so surreal for these kids. You know, he's not thinking about it, but these other guys are. And, you know, it's great to see. Hopefully he can stay healthy the rest of his career and, you know, shoot, anything can happen. I didn't know that he'd even come back from the back surgeries and even play again, because, you know, why come back and play if you can't play at a level as good, you know, or anywhere near where you were? And, you know, nobody's been at the level Tiger's been at since Nicklaus. And so it'll be interesting to see this chapter in Tiger's life, and just fun to have a seat watching it. You know, we get to see it all over again.
And it looks like there's more, just from the outside looking, it looks like there's more joy in what he's doing. I mean, in his prime, he'd look like an assassin, which he was.
He's smiling.
Smiles. And he loves the young guys, and that, you know, I'm sure he just loves the fact that, you know, he's trending the right way and he's beating these young kids who look up to him. But you can just tell there's just pure joy in what he's doing at this point. And I'm rooting more for him now than I ever have. Like, it just seems like he's got a different demeanor on the golf course, which I enjoy watching more as a golf fan.
Yeah, great to see him. Great to see him smiling and the whole thing. I mean, that's just, you know, it shows that, he's very relaxed on the golf course. And he wouldn't be smiling if he wasn't relaxed and having a good time. So that, look out for the other players. If he's out there doing what he's doing and then he's smiling, you know, that shows someone who's relaxed and in his element and happy to be back out again. Because I bet you there was part of him that thought he might not play again. I mean, it's what he's had to undergo with his back and his, you know, his whole body is, and to have the swing speed he's got now, it's just unbelievable.
And also, just as a golf fan, is there any other players out there that you just enjoy watching them play that, you know, people listening should say, watch this guy, and you just, you like the direction that they're going. Is there anyone that comes to mind from that standpoint?
Well, Xander Schauffele's one. I mean, what a great story, and a, you know, great kid out of San Diego here, and you know, he wins the tour championship, you know, last year at East Lake, and you know, Francesco Molinari, I'll always enjoy watching him play. Fabian Gomez, obviously Kuchar. I still love watching Stricker. You know, I mean, Stricker's fun, more old school guy. It's just there's so many guys to choose from. I like watching Brant Snedeker out there on the golf course playing. There's too many guys to choose from, really.
Man, Steve Stricker, he just makes it look so easy anymore, in the sense it's like he pegs it up on the Champions Tour and it's like 67 every round. Like, he mm-hmm. just looks like he's in complete control of his golf game, where he was at when he was down to where he got, you know, in his yep. 40s, and even where he's at now. It's just, looks like one of those guys who actually has figured out this extremely difficult game that is so hard to get, and he yep. looks like he's just on autopilot with it. He's so good at this point, it's crazy.
Yeah, he is, and he's a great guy, too.
Well, the next questions I have are kind of more lighthearted, and we ask every tour player that's been on the podcast these sort of questions, so no right or wrong answer. If you could take three PGA Tour players or Champions Tour players, and you're going to go out for a day on the golf course, fun money game, and some drinks and dinner afterwards, who are you taking, and why are you taking those guys?
Three guys?
If there's your, you got to make a foursome of fun.
Okay. Well, Freddie, that's a no-brainer. And I would take Lee Trevino. And I got to take my dad. I mean, I got to do that. That would be my group.
It's a pretty good group. best golf shot you ever hit under pressure.
Best golf shot I ever hit under pressure. 2002 Q School Final, Stadium Course, 17th hole, final round. I know that if I hit the green, 168 yards or 170 yards, whatever it was, I know if I hit the green, I've got my card locked up for the next year in 03, because I make par there. I can make bogey on 18 and still get my card. And as soon as I hit the 8-iron, I knew it was in the middle of the green. And I knew I had my card locked up. I went par-par and got my card by 2. So that one, because I know if I hit it in the water, I'm not getting my card. And so to know the situation and to hit the shot and know right when it came off the club it was dead in the middle of the green was a great feeling.
This one's a little bit different, but the best golf shot you ever saw a competitor hit in competition where you were just blown away of how good of a golf shot that was. Something that come to mind, we saw somebody else, and you're just like, holy cow, that is incredible.
I played in the event, but I saw it on TV. The playoff, Tiger Woods and Grant Waite at the Canadian Open at Glen Abbey, and he hit the 6-iron from 200 and whatever he was out of the bunker to about 15 feet. And it won the tournament for him. Nobody else in the world could hit that shot that he hit, and he just took dead aim at it. I'm like, and all of us players were like, are you kidding me with that shot? That was unbelievable.
Who had the most raw talent you've ever either worked with as a coach or saw on the PGA Tour when you were out there playing?
I would say, I mean, I go back to Freddie Couples with how simple it looked and how simple it still looks. I know his back's not great all the time, but it's just an effortless swing, and it just, like, makes it look easy.
Do you ever watch PGA Tour coverage, and as a teacher, you're watching this, and you're thinking to yourself, man, if I could just work with this guy for a half hour, it would be so much better. Now, you don't have to give names, but does that ever actually happen?
Oh, yeah.
You're just almost screaming to yourself of, oh, yeah. My gosh, if I could get 30 minutes with this person, it would be so much better.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I see stuff on TV all the time, and that's the teacher in me. It's like, and I have friends like, why don't you go tell them? I said, no, they have to come to me. I'm not going to, last thing you want as a player is some yahoo coming up to you going, hey, I know what you're doing wrong. You want to spend a little time together, I'll tell you. Like, no, That's not happening.
Last question I have for you. The three best golf courses in the world, and what makes those three so special?
Three best golf courses in the world? Wow. Well, my favorite is, and one that I'd play my last round on if I had one round to play, would be Cypress Point. You know, I haven't played all the courses out there, but Augusta's another one for me. Probably Pine Valley, really. I mean, it was kind of silly to pick three of the, you know, top five or six in the world, but those would be the three that I would say.
Yeah, I've only played Cypress out of those three, but I'll tell you, that walk around Cypress Point is as is as good as it gets, man. It really is. So your three choices are, I don't think anyone's going to be able to argue with those. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today, Dave. I really, really appreciate it. And I know we're going to look forward to watching you. We'll be following your career on the Champions Tour. And like I said, thanks for your time today. And I've really enjoyed having you on.
You got it. I enjoyed being on. Thanks for having me.